Tony.
Good morning.
How you doing, man? Good morning.
I'm doing good. I just had my 1 ounce of cold brew in a shot glass, so feeling peppy.
Love that. Let's go. Feeling peppy. Got pep in your step.
Yeah.
Number one, I'm so bad at publishing these podcasts like on time. I'm publishing them like 6 weeks later, sometimes more, but I'm going to get better at that. I'm going to get better at that as a goal of mine. But as of the recording of this, I just finished that month of spiking my blood sugar and losing weight. And I've just been so regimented with my training and my nutrition and all of that. Today, I woke up and my wife was like, no, let's just hang out. And then like our daughter woke up. And so just like didn't work out today. We just hung out all morning. It was a good morning. I had breakfast with my wife and daughter. So now I'm, because usually I've been waking up, getting a workout in, but today was a very relaxed day.
Well, you're positively glowing right now. So I think it
feels
good. Well.
Yeah. Just nice to have some sleep in days and relax a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, especially when you've been so, like you said, regimented, disciplined, you know, you savor that little break that much more, right?
Yeah, it definitely makes you appreciate the breaks much more than, and, you know, it's like the rainy days make you appreciate the sunshine a little bit more. Same thing with you have a period of time when you're super regimented and all of a sudden you're like, you know what, like that was, let's just take a day off. And that day off just feels like incredible.
Man. Awesome. So we've got some good energy coming into this one. We had a great suggestion from a listener.
Did they DM you about it?
They did.
So any listeners, if they have suggestions, they just DM you. We will put your Instagram in the show notes. So any suggestions for podcasts, just DM Tony. What did this listener say?
McLifestyle Fitness says, hey, Tony. Really enjoyed the podcast with Jordan during the week. Love your style of interviewing, and Jordan is one of favorite people to follow in this space.
Thank you very much. That's super nice.
On this week's episode, Jordan spoke about implementing a grading system into training similar to that of jiu-jitsu. So I think it would make for a great episode if you and Jordan spoke about what the criteria would be to progress from white to a black belt in strength training. There's probably a lot of directions you could go, but I think it would make for a brilliant episode or even episodes. Thanks, Tony. Hope you have a great weekend.
I like that. All right. So this could be very cool in the long run. So we are, as of the past week, officially underway creating a brand new app, website, everything for the Inner Circle. And I've been thinking about ways to incorporate promotions within fitness, like, you know, in martial arts, it's great because you have the next belt coming or the next stripe coming, and it keeps you motivated and it lets you know you're making progress. So this might be very cool to potentially incorporate into the future Inner Circle app and website, to, as people hit certain markers, they could get a progression. But I'm assuming we should start with, let's go over what the belts are. And we're just going to make it the exact same belts in jiu-jitsu, right? The same belts for jiu-jitsu as same belts for strength training. And we'll just come up with what maybe strength standards you would need in order to go from one belt to the next to eventually reaching like a black belt in strength and conditioning. What do you think about that?
Yeah. And I was, you know, thinking it could just be kind of an open conversation, just because applying one system of measurement to another modality might bring up some intricacies or some things. So my goal is to have the conversation and not necessarily to arrive at this is the perfect belt system
good.
For strength
like
by the
better.
End, but
like
to kind of start playing with this idea and having an in-depth discussion about it wherever it goes.
And to give people ideas, not like you have to lift this much weight in order to achieve a black belt and strength and conditioning. It's more just like get the wheels turning and being like, okay, so here maybe is a good goal for you to shoot for in terms of where you are now and where you could be in the future.
Yeah. And I actually think that's a great place to start because, you know, I was recently introduced to the jiu-jitsu belt system.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who aren't familiar, there's white belt, which is when you are brand new and have no prior training.
Correct.
There's blue belt, which is the next level. then there's purple, then there's brown, and then there's black belt. Mm-hmm. Black belt being you have reached some sort of mastery of the art. And then there are stripes, which are just kind of like markers along the way for mm-hmm. each belt system. And then at black belt, there are degrees of black belt.
Mm-hmm.
So like ninth degree black belt is like the most legendary people to have ever done jiu-jitsu. So that's kind of the framework that we're looking to apply here.
Mm-hmm.
But you mentioned like, yeah, we would maybe do a strength standard to get from one belt to the next. And I wanted to ask you about that first, because it sounds to me like in a lot of jiu-jitsu academies, first of all, belts are given by discretion of the mm-hmm. coaches.
Correct.
So in this situation, you're showing up at a gym several times a week for months, years, and at some point, and this has never happened to me, so I don't know how this goes, but at some point the coach says, hey, Jordan, I think that now you're a purple belt, and they give you a belt. Like, right? I mean, it's so let's take it from the jiu-jitsu perspective.
Cool. We'll start with jiu-jitsu and then we'll move over.
Yeah. How is the coach making that decision?
Yeah.
About the student?
So there's a lot to consider. And what I'll start by saying is everything you said about jiu-jitsu is correct in terms of white, blue, purple, brown, black. And then after a certain number of degrees, like you look at like the most legendary, there are actually like other belts. There's like a coral belt at after a certain level of black belts. But when you look at the coral belts, the people, even a ninth degree black belt, like they're old. Mm-hmm. They've been doing this for a long time. Like they've mm-hmm. been doing this for 30, 40, 50 years. And so what's really interesting to me is something that I initially thought that, wow, someone who's a fifth degree black belt must always beat a purple belt. But that's not always the case, especially from the perspective of a fifth degree black belt might be like 60 years old. And a purple belt could be a young lion, 22-year-old kid who's been training since he was 12 and just way, way more fit, way more energetic, the technical skill, more mobility, more strength. So it's not even necessarily that just because you're a higher belt, you're going to beat everyone who's a lower belt at all. You know, I've beat black belts before, and I've been beat by white and blue belts before. So, because I'm a purple belt at this point. So it's funny, in jiu-jitsu, a lot of the practitioners will say the only people who care about the belts are people who don't do jiu-jitsu. Because it's an easy way to categorize how good they think you are without ever doing it. In sort of the same way that in strength training, someone who doesn't strength train will always just be like, how much do you bench?
Yeah.
No one cares really how much you bench when you're in the strength world, unless like you're a powerlifter or bench press specialist. If people really care how strong you are, they'll ask like, how much do you squat? How much do you deadlift? Those are things
that
they'll-
How much do you weigh?
they'll look at like your weight in relation to your strength standards as opposed to just how much do you bench, right? So in jiu-jitsu, one thing that I think is really important to remember is that it's not just about what belt you are. There are so many other things that come into play in terms of your actual skill level. And so when you're getting a promotion, it's not just about how good you are. It's also in regard to how consistent you've been. Like, have you been showing up? Because some people are just naturally better than others, like in everything. On my podcast yesterday, I was talking about how someone asked, is it easier for some people to lose weight than others? And the short answer is, yeah, some things are always easier for some people than others. And so same thing with jiu-jitsu. Some people walk in and they're just really freaking good. They're just a phenom. Yeah. Usually it takes about 10 years to get your black belt. There are some people like this one guy, BJ Penn, who his nickname is literally the prodigy. He got his black belt in 3 years. It's just, there are some people who are naturally better than others. So consistency, how much you're showing up. Also, and this is one of the things I love about martial arts is, are you being a helpful training partner? Are you being a good person? Not even just in the gym, but outside of the gym. They'll look at like Some professors look at, are you doing community service? Are you doing charity? Are, when someone else comes in the gym, are you training with them? And rolling is the term that they use in jiu-jitsu. Like, rolling is a form of training, but are you rolling with them appropriately based on their skill level? Like, are you only training the things you're good at, or are you deliberately going out of your way to try and find the things that you aren't good at? So it's more of a holistic approach to life as opposed to just jiu-jitsu. And that is one of the greatest quotes I've ever heard. Someone said, what's the hardest belt to get in jiu-jitsu? And any logical person would probably say black belt, but it's actually white belt. White belt is by far the hardest belt to get in jiu-jitsu, because for that you have, like, most people in the world will never try it. So by definition, the hardest belt to get is white belt, which ironically, all you have to do is show up and pay the entrance fee and you get your white belt. So that's the one that requires the least amount of skill, but it requires the most amount of, I think, probably bravery and open-mindedness and willingness to learn. The white belt is by far the hardest belt to get. So for me, that's where we transfer this over to strength training.
Yep. Yep.
You immediately become a white belt as soon as you walk in the gym, as soon as you're willing, like, you know what, like, I'm willing to make myself uncomfortable to go in here and potentially be judged by other people. People worry about that. I worried about that when I started jiu-jitsu a little over 4 years ago. I had years of powerlifting under my belt, world-class powerlifter, elite level powerlifter, wrestled for 10 years, like, relatively well-known on social media. And I was petrified going into jiu-jitsu, being like, what are they going to think of me? Am I going to be judged? For the first, like, year and a half, 2 years, it was very scary for me. So same thing with, like, the things that we face going into the gym are the same things we face in life. Whether it's, you know, you're going into an interview, you're worried what they're going to think about you. You're going on a date, you're worried about what they're going to think about you. You're going into the gym, you're worried about what people are going to think of, like, oh my God, am I overweight? Are they going to think I look stupid? Just showing up and going there, you get your white belt. That's number one, I would say. And obviously I'm using joining the gym as a proxy here, but it could be, I think it's the first time in my life I've ever used the word proxy, by the way. I don't even know if I used it properly.
Well done.
But
well
is done. You could also, like, I don't know, if you start working out at home, you also get your white belt. If you've gone from never working out to working out, like, I don't care, because some people can't afford a gym. So the gym isn't necessarily like the one standard, but starting, beginning, doing it. For many people, it's joining a gym. And I think at that point, you've been given your white belt. With that being said, you'd never get your white belt taken away from you. And I think that's really important. Like, you could go into a jiu-jitsu academy, get your white belt, and then you show up for 3 months and then you quit. No one can take the white belt back. When you go back to jiu-jitsu, you've still got that white belt if you decide to go back. If you never go back, you still have your white belt. Once you've earned it by going in and paying for it, and stepping on the mat for your intro class, you've earned it. That's your white belt. You are a white belt. And so that, I think, is once you've stepped in the gym, once you've started training, once you've put that first foot forward, that first step forward, you've got your white belt. And it's only up from there. Like, you can always progress upwards from there. Even if you take a week, a month, a year, 10 years off, you've got your white belt and you can always continue to build on it.
Yeah, that's such a good point. One of the things that you've said that just sticks in my mind, that's just burned in there, is one of our earlier episodes. And you were basically saying, you don't have to have the perfect plan. You don't have to, you know, go max out on everything. You don't have to do everything right. All you have to do is start.
Mm-hmm.
You just have to start. And man, there's been so many times where I've been dragging ass and, like, not on my game. And I just heard you in my head, like, you just have to start. And just taking that first step is just, it's the hardest part and also the most important part, right? Because once you've done it, it's like, oh, that wasn't so bad. Let's keep going.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
But yeah, I think white belt for strength training, you know, you just have to start.
That's it. And I think that we have to be clear and say the sort of war, the battle I'm having in my head right now is, do you need to start with actually strength training, or could it be something as simple as walking? And my gut tells me it doesn't even need to be strength training. You don't have to go lift a weight. You could just start by walking. whether it's walking on the treadmill at the gym. And if it's not walking, it's elliptical. If it's cycling, swimming, I don't give a shit. You're just doing something. Walking like in around your home, up your stairs, like taking time out of your day to do it. And the reason I'm saying this is especially in regard to jiu-jitsu, your first day, your first intro class, usually you're not sparring. You're not fighting people. You're learning basic fundamental movements. You're learning foundational skills and patterns. You're learning how to fall. The most important skill that you learn in jiu-jitsu is when you first walk in is how to fall properly, because most people don't know how to fall. And I saw a devastating video earlier today of someone falling, and she smacked her head on the ground and got knocked out. And it's one of those things where learning how to fall can save your life, even if it's nothing to do with a fighting situation. So I think learning how to move and learning to move is probably, that's how you got your white belt. Cool. Now we're just moving. We're just moving. We're just getting your body going. And that can be walking, jogging, elliptical, biking, swimming, whatever you want to do. But some type of movement is, I think that's, you got started, you got your white belt. And then from there, I don't think we'll do it for every belt, but I think the stripes are actually important for white belt and strength training.
Okay.
So in jiu-jitsu, you get different stripes. So once you like, you get your white belt, and then the first marker of progress is your professor will give you one stripe on your belt. And this will usually come sometime between the first 2 months and the first 6 months of training, depending on how consistent you've been showing up. And I should say, in case there are some jiu-jitsu people in here listening, not every jiu-jitsu academy will do stripes, just like everyone in strength training agrees and disagrees on certain things. Some jiu-jitsu academies are like, we don't do stripes. We just do belts. You get your white belt, then you get your blue, then purple, brown, black, blah, blah, blah. I think the majority, especially nowadays, understand that there can be a great deal of importance placed upon stripes because it shows people they're making progress and it gives them incentive to keep going. So there are four stripes that you get. So you get 1, 2, 3, 4. And then after your fourth stripe, that's when you're eligible to be promoted to the next actual colored belt. Mm-hmm. So I think the next progression here is, well, how do you get your first stripe on your white belt in strength training? How do you get your first stripe on your white belt in terms of just exercise and movement? And I would say there's no strength standard that I would have anybody meet in order to get the first stripe. It's not like you have to lift X amount of weight. You don't have to run X distance. You don't have to have your heart rate in a certain range. For me, the only thing that matters when it comes to getting your first stripe on your white belt is your consistency. Mm-hmm. That's it. And I would actually even go so far as to say it probably has less to do with consistency and more to do with how many times you've showed up. It's actually, I think, as I'm talking about it, more of a totality number rather than a frequency and consistency percentage per week or per month. Because especially I'm looking at jiu-jitsu, there are some people who they'll get their first stripe in 2 months. Some people they'll get it in 6 months. And it rarely has to do with their skill level, and it more has to do with how many times they've actually showed up to class. Yeah. And some people show up to class once a week. Other people show up to class 5 times a week. So the person who shows up to class 5 times a week, they're going to get their first stripe within 2 months. The person who shows up to class 1 time a week is going to get it probably within 6 months. And I think it's more a matter of how many times they showed up in total, not necessarily like, okay, well, this person has been more consistent, and they have been, but it's more just like they showed up the right number of times and that's it. It's less about, well, you have to show up this many times per week.
Yeah.
I think later on your consistency will matter more, especially in like the second, third, and fourth stripe. But the first stripe is just, did you show up X number of times? So I think if we're going to put a number on it, did you deliberately set time aside to exercise, move, work out 30 times? I think 30 individual sessions of working out, and it doesn't have to be 2 hours. It could be 15 to 20 minutes. I would say 30 individual times of 15 to 20 minutes at least, in which you're not on your phone. And when I say you're not on your phone, like you can listen to a podcast, whatever, but you're not sitting down looking at your phone. Mm-hmm. You're deliberately moving for that time period, whether it's strength training, whether it's walking, whether it's swimming. And if you want to be on your phone talking to someone, that's fine while you're walking. That's not a problem. But it has to be time set aside for actual exercise and movement. I'd say 30 times is when you get your first stripe.
Yeah, because this is about exposure, right? This is sort of about literacy. Like you've been showing up and getting familiar with what it means to walk, to go for a jog, to pick up a dumbbell, to put your weights back, people, you know, that kind of thing. And exposure is the most important part early on, because you're a sponge at the beginning. You don't know anything. Mm-hmm. You're just a dry sponge ready to absorb as much as you can.
Yeah. Yeah, it's exactly right. And it's fun when you get that first stripe, at least in jiu-jitsu, when you're called up in front of the class. It's at the end of a class, usually the class is over and you'll see the professor. It's funny because usually all the white belts are in the same class. They have like a basics mm-hmm. fundamentals class and all the white belts are there. And some white belts have no stripes. Some white belts have 1, 2, 3, 4 stripes. And so you don't know who's going to be getting their stripe. And when your name gets called and you get brought up to the front of the class and you get that first stripe on your belt, it's just, I don't know if there's many better feelings than that. It's watching my daughter be born was definitely one of them, but still, like, it's, you feel so, it's
kind of on the same
it's
level.
Like, it's yeah. basic. Yeah. 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 Like, it's just, it's, you feel so proud of yourself and you're finally like, because one of the things that about the belts, and I actually really like this, is everyone has to wear their belt when they're like wearing the uniform. And so it's basically a way of everyone seeing exactly what level you're at. In the gym, there's not really a way to tell how fit someone is or how athletic someone is or how strong someone is just by looking at them. In jiu-jitsu, you're wearing it literally on your uniform. You see like, okay, well, that person is literally no stripe, white belt. They have very little experience. And so once you get the first stripe, it's the first indicator of being like, just by looking at you, this person has some level of commitment. This person has some level of knowledge. This person has been here, has some level of discipline. And to get that first stripe, it's like, you're no longer the lowest on the totem pole. You're no longer the lowest ranking, right? Like, even for me, if I go into a gym where no one knows me, I'm a small dude. I'm small, short, like I'm not jacked. People like don't expect much. As soon as I start deadlifting, people freak the fuck out.
Yeah.
I put four plates on, five plates on. It's very cool. But like that feeling of feeling so good is the feeling you get as soon as you get your first stripe, because it's essentially it's ego. It's like now when people look at you, they see that and they see something different than they saw before. And that is like when they see the stripe or they see a different belt color, they see something different than they saw before. And so that's where it's cool to have that first stripe in strength training, because it would be great if we could have those, because then people could see that progression without you having to show it to them actually on the gym floor.
And so, you know, this won't really apply for those of you that are working out at home or outside or something, but when you first go to a gym, you're sort of bewildered. You're mm-hmm. looking around. You don't know what all the machines do. You're like, where's the locker room? Everybody's, you know, doing their thing. You don't know where the water fountain is, whatever it is. You're just kind of lost. Mm-hmm. Once you put those 30 sessions in, you know where everything is. Mm-hmm. You got some sort of routine down. You come in, you punch the card in or whatever, you go to the locker room. That alone, that confidence or comfort in that space coming just from exposure
mm-hmm.
might be that feeling that you get. That kind of like, hey, I've arrived somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
So just a thought.
Yeah. Yeah. And then when you walk in, you know, the person behind the desk, they it's no longer like, now you're not thinking, you're not worried. Are they thinking anything bad about you? Like now they're smiling at you, which is funny. Cause when you walk into a place you don't know, someone will give you like an inquisitive look. And often you think, oh my God, they think I'm an imposter. They think that I shouldn't be here. When in reality, it's just like, they're seeing a new face and mm-hmm. they don't know who you are. And you're probably giving them a similar look as well. So by the time you get your 30 sessions in, they know you, they know who you are, they expect you, they give you a smile. That's when oftentimes sometimes you'll see these amazing stories. I just saw one the other day of a woman just so happy because a guy told her, is like, hey, I've seen you here in the gym a lot, and I'm just really proud of you for coming in. And she was like crying in her car because it meant so much to her. It's like, that wouldn't happen on her first day. Mm-hmm. Usually that would only happen if she's been there consistently and he has seen her enough times to, like, number one, feel comfortable to actually go up to her and say that. So that, I think, is all often part of that first stripe of just, you know, just like you said, you know where everything is. You have a better idea of the people there who are going around the same time as you, and you feel like now you belong. And then you can start to recognize if someone is coming in for their first time.
Yep.
That's an important one as well. Like, you can start, oh, that's this person's first time. You can recognize the shoes that they're in because you were in them not too long ago. And it's a good feeling, because then you can try and be a welcoming force for them and a positive attitude and someone who can be helpful in their journey as well.
So, staying on this stripe system, do you think all the stripes in white belt are exposure based, let's put it, or do you think that there are some other standards that you would want to apply?
Yeah, so I think total number of sessions really applies for the first, we'll call it the first four stripes, I think. So you, in order to get the first four stripes, I think you probably have, so the first stripe is 30 sessions. We'll say the second stripe is 60 sessions. The third stripe will probably push it to like 100. We'll say 100 sessions for the third stripe. And then for the fourth stripe, you have to come a total of 150 sessions, I think, is a good number. And obviously, I'm sort of making these up on the spot, but in order to get your fourth stripe, you have to work out 150 times.
Is that total, or is that in addition total, to the 30, total. 60? Okay, got it.
Because after the first 30, you get your first stripe. After 60, you get your second stripe. After 100, you get your third stripe, or 110, whatever. And then 150 is when you get your fourth stripe. You're still a white belt, but now you're an experienced white belt. You've got four stripes on your belt. And if we're thinking about it, if you work out, let's say, three times a week, right? So three times a week, you know, I'm not good at math, Tony.
If that you work would take out 50 weeks.
That would take, oh, dude, that worked out so unbelievably well. That takes about a year.
Yeah.
It takes about a year, right? Because there's 52 weeks in a year.
A year in your white belt of 3 days a week. Yep.
Yeah. And so generally speaking, white belt is between 1 to 2 years for people. Before you get your blue belt, it's 1 to 2 years. So by the time you get your fourth stripe, you're not a blue belt yet. You still have time until you reach your blue belt. So it takes you three times a week. If you work out three times a week, it'll take you about a year to get your fourth stripe. And oftentimes people, they'll have weeks that they'll miss, or maybe they're only working out one or two times a week when they start. So this makes sense. This is about a year, year and a half until your fourth stripe. That actually could not have worked out any better. That seems like planned that. We didn't plan that. That was fucking awesome. So now, in order to go from four stripe white belt to blue belt, now it's not just about total exposure. It's not just about total workouts. Now you have to factor in your consistency. Mm. Now I think it's about factoring in, are you showing up on a consistent basis? Are you using a period? If someone is using a bad day or a bad week as a justification to stop for a month, you don't get your blue belt.
Mm.
If you, and that's not like, let's say, I don't know, if you go on vacation or whatever it is, you have an injury. Yeah, you need to take time off. But if you, let's say you hurt your ankle and you just stop going to the gym for 2 months, you don't get your blue belt. If you hurt your ankle and you still go to the gym and you find ways to work around that ankle injury, mm-hmm. whether that's just training upper body, or you find exercises, you Google exercises, YouTube exercises, ask a coach at the gym to help you find exercises you can do on your for your lower body that don't hurt your ankle, now you've qualified for your blue belt. Now you're facing obstacles that are different than when you first walked in. Now you're facing the obstacles of being there on a consistent basis. It's not just I'm going for total number of exposures. Now I'm trying to be like, okay, I'm trying to make this a lifestyle. I'm trying to do this on a consistent basis because that's how I know I'm going to get the most benefits over the long term. Understanding not just the physical, but the mental side of it as well. So if you're finding a small reason to give up or quit, you don't get promoted to blue belt. You get promoted to blue belt once you're starting to see the difficulties that come up and you're overcoming them mentally. And this has nothing to do with how much weight you can lift.
Right.
This has nothing to do with your performance in the gym necessarily. This has nothing to do with how much fat you've lost. This is solely to do with how willing are you to keep going when things get tough and how consistent can you be? That I think is the difference between a white belt and a blue belt.
And is that criteria something that you pulled from jiu-jitsu? Is that part of what you think coaches are
promoting? It's a little bit different.
On?
I do think coaches definitely do promote on that. That's for sure. There's no question about it. The difference is in jiu-jitsu, in order to get your blue belt, you have to show a fundamental understanding of the basic positions. So I guess I'm glad you brought that up because now we could talk about other things that they're understanding now. So for example, in order to go from white belt to blue belt, I would like someone to understand the difference between a squat and a hip hinge.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I would like them to understand the difference between like a deadlift and a squat, moving how to move through their hips versus how to move through their knees. I would like them to understand the difference between rowing using their back versus using their arm or their traps, right? So these are basic fundamental. If you're doing a dumbbell row, a seated cable row, whatever it is, do you know how to put your shoulders in the right position to make sure that you're using the right muscles? Do you know how to drive through your feet properly, whether you're squatting or deadlifting? Are you able to understand? You don't have to do necessarily you don't have to lift a certain amount of weight, but can you do a lunge properly? And if you have an issue with a certain type of lunge, can you modify it in a way that you can still do it with good technique, maybe holding on to something for support or whatever it is? There are certain movement patterns I would like to see understood. Can you do a good plank? Can you do a good plank for 10 to 20 seconds? Can you not only a good plank, but can you maintain that position without letting your lower back overarch or getting your butt too high up in the air? Do you understand what a good push-up position looks like? Not necessarily can you do 10 push-ups from the ground, but can, even if your hands are elevated or you're doing a modified push-up, can you maintain the right position throughout? I think it's one, how consistent are you being? And are you overcoming the obstacles that it takes to overcome in order to be consistent? And have you displayed proper understanding, fundamental understanding of the essential movement patterns that will allow you to get stronger safely in the years to come?
Yeah. And so, you know, this begs the question in a jiu-jitsu context. You're training with a group of people, a class of people, under a coach or coaches, right? To learn those movement patterns correctly, to have that physical literacy, it's going to take more than just going for walks.
Correct.
What are some resources? I mean, obviously you could hire a personal trainer. What would you recommend to someone who's in the white belt phase? They're getting touches on the ball. They're showing up, but maybe they don't have a background in that.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'll start by saying like, we'll start with free and then we'll go to paid.
Okay.
From a free perspective, I think YouTube is better than Instagram. The reason I think YouTube is better than Instagram is because Instagram is inherently short form. Yep. And even I, especially in years past, have put technique videos on Instagram and I think they've been very helpful, but it's not necessarily the video as it is your mindset when you're on Instagram. It's the video could be the same, but when your mindset, when you're on Instagram, you're there for short, quick, fast content. when you're on YouTube, you're getting ready for a 3, 5, 10 plus minute video, which inherently allows you to pay attention more and focus more. So I think just from the mental side of it, from a free perspective, YouTube technique tutorials are probably the best way to go, of which I have hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, and other people do as well. So in terms of learning technique, I think a free going on YouTube, doing that. And then also when you watch a YouTube video, or after you watch it and you're in the gym and working out or at home, record yourself doing that exercise. Take your phone. And when I was first started powerlifting, I didn't have a smartphone. I had to use an actual camera. And then I had to upload it later that day on my computer and then watch that back. Now you can literally watch yourself in between sets.
These kids don't know how good they have it.
They don't get it. They don't understand. And people are like, well, how do I set my phone up? I don't have a tripod. I don't either. I fucking take it and I like lean it against my water bottle and then I just have it on me and I face me. And the thing is, you want to make sure you get your full body in it. You want to get your full body. I remember I would have clients send me technique videos, and for example, they would have send me a video of their squat and I would only see their upper body.
Yeah.
And the video would be like directly facing their face. I'd be like, no, I need it from the side view. Generally a side view is better than a frontal view or even a back view. Those can be helpful, but usually side views are best. Side view, full body. So you can see everything from your feet all the way up to your head.
Yep.
And I think YouTube, and then going back and forth between YouTube videos and then your own videos, is the best way to do it for free. From there, obviously, I'm going to say my inner circle is, I think, the best low cost option. We're going to go in order of cost, right? So free is first, then low cost. Inner circle is $24.99 a month. If you want to join, the link is in the show notes. It's paid quarterly or annually. So you pay either every quarter or annually. And number one, we have all of the technique videos in the app and on the website. Hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of in-depth. These aren't just like the GIFs. This was a big question when I first started the Inner Circle. Did I want to just do like a 3 to 5 second video with no explanation, or do I want to explain it? And the reality is, the reason I ended up choosing to do longer duration videos is because if any coach has coached someone in person, they know very quickly you can't just show someone the exercise and then expect them to do it. You can't just be like, hey, do this, and then them do it properly. It's like, hey, here's what you're going to do. We're going to get your feet at this level, a little bit wider than shoulder width apart. You're going to turn your toes slightly out. Now from here, you're going to try and balance your weight between your heel to your forefoot. We're going to explain the tripod foot. Then from here, you're going to send your butt to the wall behind you. We want to make sure that you're showing your nipples to whatever it is. It's like your nipples to the wall in front of you. I want to be able to see the letters on your shirt. Da, 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 da. I realized I ended on nipples and I didn't really give more context there. It was not the best. But you can't just show someone and just have them replicate it. Very, like, maybe 1 in 1,000 people can do that. Maybe. And that's probably being generous. You need to really, really cue them and understand, like, hey, let's talk about this. So that's why we chose the longer duration videos. And so in the Inner Circle, we have all of those. They're like between 2 to 5 minutes. And so you get complete technique coaching. Yeah, and then
that's fantastic.
When you join if you want to join the Facebook group, which not all the members do, but a lot of them do, you can take your videos, upload them to the Facebook group, and get immediate feedback on all of your techniques. So not only can you review it, but you can have more experienced lifters and coaches reviewing your technique for you. And so that is, I think, it for the cost, it's invaluable. It's unbelievable. So if you want to join the Inner Circle and have that, link is in the show notes. After that, that's when we go to one-on-one coaching, both online and in person. Mm-hmm. I don't offer one-on-one coaching anymore. Maybe at some point in the future I will, but there are many amazing coaches in the world who do offer one-on-one coaching. My best friend, Mike Vacanti, offers one-on-one coaching on the regimen, if you want to search him out. And so he's amazing. There are many amazing online coaches out there. Now, what I would say is, what's really best, the best form to weigh your technique checked out, is in-person coaching. Mm-hmm. That's like the best, because you have someone in there and they can actually get their hands on you and they can know you're going to be in this position. I think it's going to be the most efficient. It's also the most costly.
Expensive, yeah.
It's by far the most expensive. Hundreds of dollars per session, usually. At least $100 per session. And that's a very not expensive coach. $100 an hour is not expensive, especially nowadays with fucking inflation, and like cost of eggs being so high, you know? So it's that's not very much relative to the service they're offering. And there are many coaches who charge $200-$400 an hour. So my obvious, highly biased point of view is you join the inner circle and you get this. Wherever you are in the world, you can join and you get this. But you, in or going back to the discussion, like, it's not just walking at this point. Now you have to be strength training. In order to get your blue belt, it's not just walking. And it's what's interesting is I've spoken forever about how walking is the most underrated, the most important exercise for your health.
Yeah, but keep walking. Don't stop.
Keep walking. But when we're talking about a belt ranking system, especially or specifically when it comes to strength training, obviously strength training is going to have to be included in this. And I don't think we can overlook the impact strength training has on your health. I think walking is the most underrated and the most helpful, but I also very much understand strength training is essential for long-term health. It's not a good idea. It is essential for long-term health. So with that in mind, like if you want to get your blue belt, you have to be strength training. And the blue belt, the main requirements are an understanding of fundamental movement patterns. You have to know how to squat. You have to know how to hinge. Another word for hinge, by the way, is deadlift, right? And deadlift doesn't necessarily, people hear deadlift and people who've never done that before, they think, oh my God, like I'm going to die. It's like, no, it's just learn. It's what it really boils down to is, do you know how to pick something up off the ground safely?
Yeah.
That's what a deadlift is. And hinging, it's referring to the action at your hips. Do you know how to move through your hips and not through your lower back? So squat, hinge, push up, row, overhead press, bench press, plank. Those are, if you can show fundamental understandings of these movements, you can get your blue belt.
Yeah. Yeah. And we're not saying you have to pick up this much weight.
Right.
You have to use as many reps. It's,
exactly.
Very nice. So in the blue belt phase, we're kind of focusing on techniques. Is that how it's going to be with each stripe through the blue belts? And I don't know that we have to do each stripe going forward, but just like, you know, in a broader perspective, is it kind of like acquiring more techniques and more?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think we're definitely not going to do the belts or the stripes at this point because it would just take too long and it would be too meticulous. But once you get your blue belt, and going back, the hardest belt to get is the white belt, right? That's the hardest belt to get. I think blue belt is the next hardest belt. So 95% of people who get their white belt don't get their blue belt. It's a huge drop off rate because, and this is in jiu-jitsu specifically.
Right.
And I would imagine that it's maybe somewhat similar in strength training. Probably, I think, actually, you know what? I think it's almost in reverse at this point for jiu-jitsu and strength training. I think the main difference in terms of why people will keep going in strength training versus jiu-jitsu is because in strength training, once you start lifting, it's immediately addictive. Mm-hmm. And I think anyone listening who's done strength training for a short period of time will understand once you start realizing how quickly you get stronger, it's the most empowering feeling in the world. It is the most, it's addictive. And literally from session to session, you will get stronger at the beginning. These are called newbie gains.
Yep.
You start getting stronger. You go on day one, you're lifting 20 pounds. On day two, you're lifting 25 pounds. You're like, holy shit. And it's not necessarily because you've actually gotten stronger. It's because you're learning the technique. You have better perceptual awareness. It's not because your muscles have gotten bigger or because like your muscles can necessarily produce more force. A lot of it just has to do with intramuscular coordination, neuromuscular improvements, all of that. But to you, it looks like you're actually getting stronger. Your muscles are getting stronger, bigger. You're looking in the mirror. Like Monday, you're looking at the mirror. Tuesday, you're looking in the mirror. You're like, oh my God, I look infinitely better than 24 hours ago, right? It's crazy. Jiu-jitsu is the exact opposite. Jiu-jitsu, you go in and the first 2 years is the worst 2 years of your entire journey.
Yeah.
Because you're getting smashed by other people and you don't notice yourself getting better for probably, you really don't notice any improvements for probably the first 3 to 6 months. It takes 2 years for, I think, you really to start noticing like, wow, like I can actually now assert myself over other people. In strength training, it's just you versus the iron. And you can very quickly assert yourself over the iron, which is one of the reasons why it's so empowering. So in jujitsu, those first 2 years, like, it's devastating. The first 2 years in strength training, it's the most amazing thing in the world.
Yeah.
So I actually think it's a little bit easier to progress in belts in strength training than it is in jujitsu early on. Later on, like, once someone gets their purple belt, they're getting their black belt. Like, they're in, they've bought in, they're addicted, they have a relatively high level of jujitsu. It's like, it's no question they're going to do it. In strength training, once you get your purple belt, that's when you see people really starting to fall off.
Mm-hmm.
That's because you are far beyond the newbie gains era. Like, you lose newbie gains like by the second stripe of blue belt, maybe even before then, depending on how hard you took it during your white belt phase. But by the time you get your purple belt in strength training, there might be some nagging injuries. You're not getting stronger nearly as fast as you were when you were a blue belt. And you start, and then you start seeing some people who came in training later than you, who are maybe stronger than you now. And you're like, why are they getting stronger than I am? And you really start to question, what's the point? Because at that juncture in your strength training journey, or up to that point in the juncture, so much of the reason why you've gone is you've associated strength training with you getting stronger. And you've all, your entire ego is built around, I can get more weight on the bar, I can lift more weight, I can get stronger. And then you hit purple belt in strength training, and all of a sudden you're like, I'm not getting stronger anymore. I'm not getting nearly as strong as I once was, as quickly as I once was. Before, maybe during blue belt, maybe your second, third stripe, fourth stripe of blue belt, you were still able to get stronger every like 2 months, every 3 months, you were putting an extra 10, 15 pounds on the bar. By the time you get to purple belt, it might take 4 to 6 months to add 5 to 10 pounds to your lifts. It's like, that's fucking hard, man. And in those 4 to 6 months, your strength will have periods in which you're weaker. You'll have periods in which you're stronger. Sometimes, like, you'll feel great and you go to the gym and you're 20 pounds off your personal record and you don't know why. And it really starts to play with your head and your emotions. And that is, I think, the difference between a blue belt and a purple belt in strength training, is where a blue belt is still getting their newbie gains. Purple belt, you're not getting anymore. And you're going to have to fight tooth and nail. And there will be years of struggle in which you're not linearly increasing your strength anymore.
Yeah. So at that point, you're really going to start have to thinking about your diet. You're going to have to start thinking about more advanced periodization, right? Consistency is that much more important, as is recovery, right?
Yep.
It's starting to sound like a job.
I think purple belt is when the minutiae that I always ram on in my social media content actually starts to become more important. I don't want to say important. Important is the wrong word. I think more relevant. Taking creatine.
Yeah.
Becomes more relevant at purple belt, and you don't have to, but that's when it becomes like, yeah, now it might actually make a difference. This is when, if you're not hitting your protein every day, it becomes far more relevant. If you're not prioritizing sleep, it becomes far more, and these aren't minutiae. The protein and sleep are important for everybody, but this is when things, this is when it gets really, really, like, this is the time where you got to start paying close attention to things. And again, the vast majority of people never make it to purple belt. So that's why the majority of my content isn't built around the smaller details. But this is when it starts becoming far more important. But I think the most important thing at purple belt and strength training is the mindset of understanding. This is why you have to build the consistency in order to get your blue belt. In order to get your blue belt, you have to be a certain level of consistent, because by the time you're purple belt, if you haven't built in the foundation of consistency, no matter what, if you aren't going and working around injuries, not through them, but working around them, if you are still able to go and just not give up because you missed a PR, because you aren't getting stronger for a week or 2 weeks or a month, if you've built that foundation, then you'll be able to make it to black belt. But if you get to purple belt and you just quit as soon as you don't hit a personal record, if you have a week or a month in which your lifts aren't as strong, well, then you're never going to succeed in this. And I think purple belt is really when we find the difference between people who lift because they love lifting and they know how good lifting is for them versus the people who only lifted because they liked posting on social media or telling people how much they lifted. And as soon as that's no longer going the way they want, that's when either they'll stop lifting and or they'll start taking drugs that could be really dangerous for them. That, and by the way, all anabolic steroids are not bad for you. There are safe ways to take them. I don't encourage or recommend anybody to do it. But the issue that we see now with social media is, especially with young men more than anyone, taking obscene amounts of anabolic steroids at a very young age and actually dying as a result of it, because now they're going after these social media likes, these follows, these views, because they think they need to keep getting stronger at the rate they did when they were white and blue belts. And now when they're purple and brown belts, and they, people know they're already high level, but maybe they're not advancing as they would like, as quickly as they'd like to. The answer in their mind is anabolic steroids and high doses, to the point in which they're poisoning themselves, they're killing themselves. And so that took a dark turn, but the purple belt is where this stuff often happens, where you really, really, really need to buckle down and do it because you love it, because you know it's good for you mentally, physically, and emotionally, and not because you're just chasing the numbers. When you stop, it's funny, I think purple belt is where jujitsu players stop chasing black belt and they start doing it because they love it. White and blue belt, they're chasing the next belt. And it only right. once do they get to, I think, purple or so, do they start to realize it doesn't matter. I just love doing it. And that's the main difference is, are you going to do it because you love doing it, or are you only doing it because you need to add weight? And if you're only doing it because you need to add weight and your entire ego is built around you getting stronger, you will fail. You will.
So here's a question. If someone's at that point where, you know, they're no longer putting a lot of weight on the bar every session, it's becoming a grind, it's tough. I've noticed a lot of people, and I think myself included at times, stopped lifting heavy, but did not stop working out. Mm-hmm. And so on this strength progression, I guess it kind of asks the bigger question is getting to black belt about continuing to add weight to the bar, if you will? Or is it about continuing the practice of strength and movement? And as an anecdote, this past year, I've been doing a kettlebell program. Mm. And yes, I'm progressing, or I was progressing in the weights, but, you know, the weight of the kettlebell is nothing like the weight that you can put on a barbell and that I would put on a barbell when I was doing more barbell strength type stuff. And I was more consistent over this past year, and I felt better over this past year than I had in a long time. How does that fit into this structure that we're discussing?
Yeah. I mean, if you had asked 23-year-old me, what does a black belt in strength training look like? I would immediately be like, all right, well, you've got to be able to deadlift like 3.5 times your body weight. You've got to be able to. And now it's just not even close to what it's not how much you lift. I think we can create some strength standards. I do think that will be good. Just like minimums. Mm-hmm. Whereas before it was about maximums, I would say, like before, like you have to be like at this level. And whereas now it's like, all right, I think just for your health, minimums, people should be doing X, Y, and Z. And I would say we could start all the way with steps and work our way up to more like basic fundamental movements, squats, deadlifts. I don't think bench press needs to be on there, to be honest.
Yeah.
And that's my own personal bias, but like, I would rather see someone dumbbell rowing than bench pressing, or judging their strength standards based on their dumbbell row or based on their chin up or based on their push up than I would based on their bench press. And 23-year-old me would be like, you are such a loser. But like, it's just the truth at this point. I would say, here's what's interesting for me in the way that I look at things now. I think a purple belt can have strength standards. Once you start getting to brown and black, it's less about how much you can lift as long as you can hit these minimums. Mm-hmm. And it's more about, number one, the consistency and doing it for a long period of time and maintaining, But also, I think brown belt is where you start to incorporate probably the transition between purple and brown is also understanding there are other things outside of strength training that you can do, right? So having more flexibility and balance in your life and not just letting strength training be everything to you. Like, you can find other things, whether it's in health and fitness or whether it's, I don't know, pottery, or like, can you still maintain your strength training and health while still, I don't know, if you want to take an acting class, like, can you still do both?
Yeah.
Or can you be a more present parent or partner, right? Incorporating these things into your life without giving up strength training and still maintaining your health and still able to improve while still being able to bring other aspects of health into your life. And I think black belt is when you can do all of that and then bring others along on the journey. Black belt is when you can start bringing other people in and inspiring them and teaching them. That's when you've reached black belt, when it's no longer about how much can you lift or how intense can you do it. It's about, like, now the journey starts over again, but instead of it being about you, now it's about other people. That's what I think black belt and strength training is.
That is so cool. That just blew my mind a little bit.
And in jiu-jitsu, that's what a lot of people say in terms of, in jiu-jitsu, the saying is black belt is when the journey starts over. That's when the journey really begins. And I think in strength training, it's similar. It's where it's like, cool, you've reached a certain level. Now, how can you help other people do the same? And I think once you've reached black belt or even purple or brown, it's like, how much better are you or the world going to get from lifting more weight versus what if instead of spending so much time on you trying to eke out another 2 pounds on your deadlift over the next year, you spend a little bit more time encouraging someone else, helping someone else's technique, bringing them into the gym, giving them a free session, you know, bringing them into your home, like giving them a call, shooting them a text. Are you being consistent? How can I help you? That's where I think you reach a much higher level, a more advanced level of black belt and strength and conditioning.
Yeah. And that's so universal. I feel the same way about professional achievement. You know, you spend so much time trying to like carve out a little space on this earth for you to make a living. And once you've got that under control, suddenly you have the space to look up and look back and give someone else a hand and bring them forward. Mm. And it's like 1,000 times more rewarding, you know?
Yeah, 100%. Louis Simmons would say something to me where it was to the effect of, what he would say is this: you can always tell who's a great coach based on who is actively trying to get their students to be better than them. Mm. And I think that's where not every black belt in strength training has to be a coach, right? You don't have to be a personal trainer. But I do think that anyone who's been to a public gym or a private gym, whatever it is, there's always some people in the gym who are just helpful.
Yeah.
They're kind and they're helpful, and they, like, you know, when you watch them lift, like, they've got great technique and they make it look effortless, and people often will gravitate towards them, and they're the type of person that they make everyone feel more comfortable being there. They make it more of a welcoming space. They're also the person that if they're there, no one's going to be a dick. No one is going to be rude or judgmental because that person is there. Mm-hmm. And like, that person is like part enforcer, part educator, part inspiration, part, like, that's the, you know, black encompasses all of these things. And so that's where I think you become that. And it's, there are personal trainers who I think they're still white belts. Mm-hmm. And they're white belts in their mentality. I think white belts are more quick to judge. White belts are more quick to let their ego get in the way. Especially, I think, actually probably blue belts more than anyone. Blue belts are, they judge, I think, the most oftentimes. They're like, because they have a certain level of experience and they're getting stronger and they understand basic movements. So they know enough to be dangerous, but they don't know enough to really like understand the power of their words, the power of their effort, the power of their remarks, like their looks, like, yeah. They don't necessarily always understand how sometimes they just need to shut the fuck up. And there are, the gym is full of blue belts. There's a lot of blue belts there. And those are usually the jerks. Those are usually the people who like will hog equipment. Those are the people who will be a little bit judgmental or very judgmental. I think the blue belts can be the worst sometimes. If you're objectively a blue belt, sometimes you just need to shut the fuck up.
Put your head down, focus on the techniques.
Yeah.
And then once you've arrived, you'll pull your head up and you'll be able to help other people along the way.
Yeah, exactly. That's it, man. That's, I think we just covered it.
Yeah. I don't know what your time's looking like, but I'm thinking maybe a future episode would be about some strength standards and maybe answering any questions that people might have about this episode.
What we can do that. Yeah. Let's, I mean, I don't know. 23-year-old me would have been able to make an entire episode just about strength standards. What we can do is maybe on the next episode, we can begin by discussing, all right, going off the last episode, we can discuss here are strength standards for squats, deadlifts, bench, chin-ups, whatever it is, push-ups. We can create strength standards to show what like beginner to advanced would look like. But I don't think it's going to take the whole episode. I think that might take 7 to 15 minutes.
Cool.
And then we can dive into the next topic.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, if you're listening and you do have follow-up questions about any of this, please send it to me. And yeah, love this episode. Thank you.
Dude, this is a great idea. I was hesitant to do it because I thought we were going to go into strength standards, but I like the way that it turned out. This is great. Thank you, brother. I love you.
Yeah, love you too.
Thank you everyone for listening. Have a wonderful week. Oh, and by the way, please subscribe to the podcast if you don't already. Please leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening. Written reviews are by far the best, so please leave a written review if you haven't already. Have a wonderful week. I'll talk to you soon.